content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, September 2018 edition. Again, on the cover of this edition is the one and only supermodel, Naomi Campbell. And we covered her along with Dapper Dan last week. So, to close out this month, we're going to go over topics such as Essence, Op-Ed, On My Mind, followed by Love and Life, and then on to, or at the end, a word from Bevy Smith, Redefining Happiness. So, for Essence, Op-Ed, On My Mind, this article is titled, Breathing While Black. It seems like everywhere we turn, white people are weaponizing the police against us for doing nothing more than living our lives. But is this dangerous phenomenon new? On April 12th, a man at a Philly Starbucks asked the cops to remove two black men from the shop because they hadn't placed an order. April 21st, workers at the Grandview Golf Course in Dover Township, Pennsylvania, called the police on five black women who they said weren't playing or were playing too slowly. April 30th, police detained three black women loading suitcases into a car upon leaving an Airbnb in Rialto, California. A neighbor thought they were burglars. It all started when two black men showed up early for a meeting at a Philadelphia Starbucks. Upon their arrival, one asked to use the restroom. He was told by the manager that only paying customers could use it. So they sat down to wait for their business associate. What happened next was wholly ridiculous, but not completely unexpected or shocking. The manager, a white woman, called the police on the men. When the cops arrived, they handcuffed both men and escorted them from the coffee shop after a brief discussion with the manager. It was a bad look for Philly police and an embarrassing display of what seems to be the latest fad sweeping the nation. White people calling the authorities to help them survive sharing public spaces with black people. A black student asleep in her dorm's common room at Yale University. A black man using a barbecue grill in Oakland Park. A black girl selling bottled water to passerbys on the street. A black man moving into his new apartment. A black woman presenting a coupon at CVS. A black boy mowing lawns. A black man lounging by the pool at his apartment complex. Black women playing golf too slowly. A black boy delivering newspapers in a predominantly white neighborhood. A black family having dinner at Subway. A black state representative campaigning in her district. A black realtor inspecting a house listed for sale. All these examples have one thing in common. A white person called the police on black people who were committing no crimes and posing no threat to anyone. This year, we've seen an uptick in incidents of racial bias involving white people. White women in particular calling the cops on black people for simply existing. But let's be clear, the increase is in the reporting, not necessarily the number of incidents. We don't know how many black folks have had to endure racial profiling that went unrecorded, but now with smartphones in every hand, ordinary citizens have become like reporters. Documenting and sharing such occurrences on social media. Given that dozens of unarmed black people have been killed by police in recent years, these videos are a painful reminder of the legacy of unwarranted violence enacted upon us for centuries. Case in point, in late March of this year, citing new evidence, the U.S. Department of Justice issued a statement that it had reopened its investigation into the murder of Emmett Till, the black teenager brutally slain in Mississippi in 1955 for allegedly whistling at a white woman. in 2017, book The Blood of Emmett Till author Timothy B. Tyson revealed that Carolyn Bryant, now Donham, the white woman who claimed Till had insulted her, admitted that she had made up the story. The two men who killed Till based on Donham's false accusation were found not guilty by an all-white, all-male jury. They later admitted to the murder. Now, we're seeing almost daily instances that could just as easily result in the death of innocent black people because other white women are weaponizing the police against us. As a black feminist living at the intersection of race and gender, it pains me to see women who experience oppression because of their gender inflict oppression upon black people based on our race. On one hand, I know what it's like to be judged based on my race, and on the other, I know how horrible it feels to be underestimated because I am a woman. But as I try to build coalitions with black people and women, I find it difficult to work with white women who in this era or new era rely heavily on the damsel in distress trope to get what they want, or at least to punish black people for daring to occupy the same space and breathe the same air. I know that there are decent white women who are as disgusted as I am by the phenomenon. They're sometimes the ones documenting and sharing these incidents of racial profiling on social media. This is important work because according to the FBI, the number of race-based hate crimes increased after Donald Trump was elected president in 2016. Trump's ugly rhetoric against black and brown people seems to have made some white citizens more comfortable acting on their racist impulses. But when a white woman calls the cops on us, it can be even more dangerous. The Equal Justice Initiative cites that historically African Americans are lynched for non-criminal violations of social customs or racial expectations, such as speaking to white people with less respect or formality than observers believed was due. Our society was leveraged or has leveraged white womanhood against people of color. Some white women appear to be using intimidation to keep public spaces free of people of color, whether they're aware of it or not, and safer than for them to enjoy. And to a degree, their white damsel act is working. We worry about sending our children out into the world, fearing a white person will call the police on them. We wonder when doing our jobs, going for a dip in a pool, or stopping for a bite to eat will result in our being handcuffed and dragged away. White people need to understand that calling the police on black people doing nothing more than going about their lives can be a death sentence. White women especially need to work with us to end this trend and advance the cause of freedom and equality for all people. Now is the time for us to come together across the lines of race and gender to fight against all forms of racist terrorism, including those masked as innocent calls to the police. And this article looks like it was written by Feminista Jones, and she is a social worker, a feminist writer, and author of the upcoming book, Reclaiming Our Space. So on to some much not lighter news. This next article is titled Love and Life. So Hope After Harvey. A year ago, the world watched in horror as Hurricane Harvey bore down on Houston, leaving destruction in its wake. The natural disaster caused more than $125 billion in damages, with the cleanup continuing even today. Meet two women who found a rainbow of love after the storm. Last August, Emily David, age 50, thought a typical storm was coming to Houston, where she lived with her family of five. Hurricane Harvey wasn't the first one. Every other time, life had continued as usual for David, who was working in a hospital while pursuing her career as a singer. She had appeared in musicals and as a 2009 finalist on America's Got Talent. Even after hearing on the news that the storm was going to be bad, for some reason, I just wasn't worried, she recalls. Then water started pouring into the garage of the 3,100 square foot two-story house David had been renting for a year and a half. She quickly ushered her family upstairs, thinking they'd be safer there. But a few hours into the downpour, as the water crept upward, she realized they would need to be rescued by a helicopter or boat. They waved white clothes out of upstairs windows to signal for help. For David, it was the lowest moment of her life. It was very fearful and started crying. She remembers when the rescue boat came out front, they had to pull us into it, riding past destroyed homes and their own two cars. The family was taken to dry ground where they caught a school bus and then walked a half mile to the George R. Brown Convention Center. David had heard God whisper that she should take her family there. We were at the center for 4 days, she recalls. Then the spirit told her to ask one of the news people at the shelter to videotape her singing. I went to the first cameraman and said no. She says I went to the second person and he says, sure, I'll tape you. Standing in the middle of the cavernous convention center among 15,000 displaced residents, David gave a rousing rendition of God Bless America. The video went viral as the world took notice of her faith and gratitude. Soon after, David and her family were relocated to a hotel where they spent the next 6 months. In that room, she received a call that changed her life. Someone said, Emily, this is B.B. Winans, and we are getting ready to fly you out to sing at Oprah's Gospel Brunch. She says the videotape of her singing in a storm had been seen in places she could not have imagined. That October, David arrived at Oprah Winfrey's 65-acre California estate. Standing in the lush gardens, she belted out Bridge Over Troubled Waters. She could see T.D. Jakes, Kerry Washington, Angela Bassett, and many other notables in the crowd. David marveled that from that really low point, she had walked through the valley and arrived at this moment. David recounts her blessings in a new independent album, Happy Being Me. She also started the Queen Emily Feed the Children Foundation to provide sustainable or sustenance for youth in need. When I walked into the shelter, I asked God, what am I supposed to do now? She says her answer came with a banner emblazoned with Save the Children. All of us will go through adversities, David says, but adversities come to make us stronger. And that was beautiful. The second person, or Still We Rise, of this same edition, like many of us, Bernada Nicole Baker, age 37, was horrified seeing Harvey. The Category 4 hurricane devastated southern Texas. From her Houston home, she shared rescue information on social media and collected funds to assist those who had been displaced. People of all races came together to help, says the Chicago native. I was so busy collecting Harvey donations, you would have thought that I was from Houston. A fellow volunteer saw Baker's post and told her about a little girl and her father who had lost everything. Baby Bella was 7 months old and living with her dad, Eric, in a car when the hurricane made landfall. Flood waters took the vehicle that had been their home. Moved by the family's need, Baker raised $700 to help the two get back on their feet. When she met them, they quickly bonded. Baker began helping Eric get a job and replace his car. My main focus was to secure Bella, explains Baker, the founder of the Princess Within Foundation, a mentoring program to support girls in building strong self-esteem and excelling academically. Baker says Eric told her that Bella's mom left when the baby was a month old and that he felt his daughter needed a mother's hand, so he asked Baker to be her godmother. A few months later, after Eric saw how Baker cared for Bella, the adults began to discuss adoption. I just didn't want to fill in. Bella needed a stable home, she says. My friends describe her as my baby on the Nile, she says, referring to the biblical story. I was not looking for a child or trying to be a single mother, but this is my path. I have a nonprofit for girls, and this is my divine assignment. Close to $10,000 in legal guardianship fees, and 10 months later, Bella is a well-adjusted, bubbly child who loves music and dances. She recently enjoyed her first Essence Festival. She loves all things Minnie Mouse and has her own room decorated in the theme. As adoption is being finalized, Baker is still a jet-setting professional, only now she's pushing a baby stroller. And she has lots of assistants. Her family and friends all fell in love with Bella. And Bella's dad is still a big part of her life. It's my goal to make sure that their relationship is cultivated, says Baker. I have been able to change the entire trajectory of Bella's future and give her a chance at the life she deserves. When I look into the eyes of this little girl, I know that we are working towards something great. Continuing on with love and life. Relationships. Be your own Cupid. Dating sites and mobile apps are here to stay. Here's how to use tech as your wing woman. More than a third of marrying U.S. couples met online. Follow these tips and swipe in your love story. So open your heart and account. We use technology for everything else. Why not in our love lives? Rapper MC Lyte and actress Tatiana Ali both met their husbands online. Diversify your profiles by signing up for at least two sites, a large one and a niche option based on your interests or demographic. If you are seeking something more serious, consider investing in a paid account like Match or eHarmony. Amanda Spann, co-founder of the new app Culture Crush, took meeting people global. Thanks to this dating app, you can search black singles throughout the diaspora based on nationality, ethnicity, or tribe. Black people are not a monolith. Singles can expand their horizons, Spann says, with more than 30,000 users, 1,000 tribes across Africa, and a growing membership in Brazil and Britain. Cultural Crush allows you to meet black men and women all over the world from your couch. Create a profile that pops. So a dating profile is not a resume. Rather than trying to fit all your amazingness into witty phrases, focus on showing a few parts of your personality. Share what you like to do for fun so your next date can imagine an evening out with you. Instead of I like new experiences, state how much you enjoy learning to make pasta or attending an astronomy lecture. Also be clear if your end goal isn't casual or you're seeking someone special. Make your move. Online dating has come a long way from AOL chat rooms and creative screen names. Now the expectation is that we bring our authentic selves, Bumble, an app designed by women that lets ladies make the first move, might be a single place to perfect your game. Singles often share their social justice passions on the app, observes Bumble sociologist Jessica Dr. Jess Garbino, PhD, who is an authority on swiping habits. Online dating evolves with the culture, she says, yet the top strategy for dating success hasn't changed. Honing your conversation. Think about how you signal that you are interested in getting to know someone, Dr. Jess advises, instead of a noncommittal hi, ask about a person's hometown or inquire about a comment in his profile. Be an online flirt. So if you still aren't ready to set up a profile, you can use social networks to connect when you meet someone. Follow up on Twitter or Instagram. You can also use Facebook's graph search to discover friends of friends and similar interests. You can specify by searching terms step by step. For single friends of my friends who live in Chicago and are 30 to 40 years old, and like her, start with single friends, then of those friends who live in Chicago, and so on. Commit to linking with like-minded people monthly. And then finally, date IRL. The term online dating is actually a misnomer. It's really about online meeting to potentially date in the real world. After you exchange a few messages and feel comfortable, graduate to phone calls and then a casual meetup in person. Going out for a quick coffee or drink will give you an opportunity to assess your connection. You should not message for more than a month without meeting if you're in the same city. As with all new people, be sure to meet in public places and always let someone know where you will be and share the contact info of your date. After I set up a few profiles, I met interesting people and reconnected with some old acquaintances, including my college crush. I also got a dinner invite in my Instagram DMs from a cutie who saw me on Bumble and got proactive. There may be some oddballs just like in real life, but don't give up. Dating is about numbers. Just note, you go out until you meet somebody you click with. So stay focused on expanding your options and embracing the experience. Every swipe brings you one step closer to the incredible person meant just for you. That was a cute article. Continuing on with love and life, parenting. Motherhood takes a village. So as a mother, you don't have to juggle everything by yourself. Organize your support system. Successfully navigating motherhood demands creativity, energy, and a lot of helping hands. Before I was homeschooling, mom was a homeschooling mom of three, now ages 7, 9, and 11. I found myself on the bedroom floor crying from utter exhaustion. It was 2012 and several months after the birth of my youngest child. My tears that day were a wake-up call. They helped me realize I needed to develop a team. We moms owe it to ourselves to do that. Here's how to cultivate your own. Number one, ask for help. Support is there, but it takes opening your mouth to get it. It took me admitting that I sometimes needed a mommy break to figure out that we may be able to do it all. But we just can't do it all alone. After hitting my limit, I learned how to request guidance in managing my feelings of being overwhelmed. Reaching out for assistance is a sign of strength, not weakness. My first step was to stop assuming that my husband and others knew what I needed. I had to communicate my requirements, and that included taking in hour for myself a few times a week. When you're ready, identify the specific ways you would like to be supported. Number two, expand your tribe. We all need one, whether it includes a friend who can shuttle the kids to activities or a family member who can cover for you when you want a respite. Check out your area's chapter of Mocha Moms or go to meetup.com to find local groups for mothers. You can also log on to Facebook for resources like Hustle Mommies, the Motivated Moms, or the Fly Mom Suite. Your sisterhood may be a few clicks away. Number three, lean on your circle. As the parents of three kids under five, Tierra Burton and her husband knew they couldn't do it by themselves. So she nourished a loyal group. Our village is a place where we grow and learn, she says. Last year, 2 months after she welcomed her third child, her mother passed away. In Burton's darkest moments, her village came through for her, cleaning her home, styling her hair, feeding her family, and just being there. Every mom deserves such a squad, says Burton. My village gave me permission to be human. And then finally, number four, make mommy friends. Don't just rely on social media. You have to go where the moms are. Indoor play areas, after school activities in the park, and story time at the library. Nothing beats face-to-face interaction. When you do meet a potential mom friend, try to discover common ground. For example, chat about your children and ask about her interest. And remember that we're all busy. If you reach out to someone and she doesn't reply right away, simply try again. So we have our final word, and this is by the lovely Bevy Smith, Redefining Happiness. So sometimes it can take a change of heart and the courage to continually reinvent ourselves to find and live our inner joy. There's an adventurous girl from Harlem who lives inside of me. Her name is Little Brown Bevy, and she keeps me on track. She's friendly and pert and dreams a world in which she can explore. But due to societal pressure to fitting in, when I was in junior high school, she went away for a long time. I remember when she came back at 33. I ended a relationship that I had thought would be the distance. Like many women, I believed that being in a relationship, being married, would make me happy. But this essentially meant that I was putting my happiness in someone else's hands. That year, I decided I would no longer allow a man to be the architect of my happiness, and I shifted my focus to my job. As a fashion advertising director, I made great money and developed the world, which had been my dream until it wasn't. I was still relying on other people to bring me joy, and that didn't fit either. At the time, I had no idea that I'd one day work in television, host a radio show, and be a writer. But I knew that I needed to change my life. That's where my five-year journey to defining my own happiness began. And that's when Little Brown Bevy reemerged, coming up on 150th Street and 8th Avenue in Harlem. I had to learn to identify women whose style and body or beauty I could connect to, starting with my mother. I always thought Pearl Bailey was amazing, too. I also loved watching the well-dressed secretaries take the train to work. Perhaps my favorite style icons were the neighborhood barmaids, who not only reminded me of Barry White's wife, Glodine, whom I love, but they were also full of personality, knew everybody's name, and were just fabulous. And it looks like that we've actually run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. I'll read the remainder of this next month for October. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.